Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol. We kick things off in Portugal, celebrating, of course, booking a place in the World Cup after that 2-0 victory over North Macedonia. The front page is dominated by the fact that they booked a place in the World Cup later this year. Could have been also different, couldn't it? If Italy had got it done against North Macedonia, it was the final that we were expecting. Bonucci's taking it well. We played it all in a one-off match. It's an absurd system. There are teams that qualified after losing four or five games. We're at home after losing only one in the 92nd minute. It is truly madness. Let's welcome in, shall we? Former Dutch international and Chelsea defender, Mario Marquiot's with us once again. Mario, this sour grape is a good way of summing this up, isn't it?
It's such a bad, bad feeling. I'm telling you guys, you know, I was, when it happened to me, actually I was, I think I was 22 or 23 years old. And when it happened to me, when I was with Holland, we played against Ireland. And I didn't make it. So I know exactly how he feels, but it's always, you talk afterwards when you talk about it, you're always going to look for some, you almost want to give someone else the problem. But if you look at Bonucci, they had all the opportunities to qualify themselves normally for the World Cup. And if it doesn't happen, that's why you're then going to point fingers at different things. Well, especially a guy of his stature should not worry about that. He should have been like winning the Euro and then going into the next stage.
Immediately when I see these sort of things, I think CONMEBOL, Ali.
Yeah, right. Well, this is misrepresentation of the truth for Bonucci. Because, yeah, it is a playoff, so you have to win in order to advance and eventually play Portugal, and you would have to win that in order to qualify to the World Cup. But to say that it comes down to one off, one match, no. It is not true, because they had a chance against Bulgaria at home. They had a chance against Northern Ireland away from home. They had two chances against Switzerland, both home and away, where they missed penalties. So there's plenty of opportunities for Italy to have made themselves clear of that group, winning the group, going to the World Cup, and you don't have to enter this absurd system, according to Bonucci. You don't have to participate in the playoff, because if you had done your job, you would have qualified out of your group. As simple as that. It is misrepresentation of the truth. And to your point about CONMEBOL, when he's saying, and he's referring to teams that have lost four and five times, and which has happened in CONMEBOL, in Uruguay, and Ecuador, and they qualified to the World Cup, it's actually making an argument for CONMEBOL, in that it is so difficult to qualify out of that confederation when you think of you have to play Argentina twice, you have to play Brazil twice. And just when you think that you get a result against Argentina or you get a result against Brazil, there's somebody else around the corner that is snatching at you, trying to get points from you. That's exactly what teams like Uruguay do, like Colombia do. Even Venezuela will do that every once in a while. Peru will do that every once in a while. So when you're thinking, let's focus on Brazil and Argentina, and then you don't pay attention to everybody else, they're good enough to get points from you. And that's why you end up losing four or five times and still making it to the World Cup. This has nothing to do with Italy. Italy failed on their own. They had it in their hands, and they failed. It's their responsibility, nobody else's.
It's a pity that whoever asked them that question didn't follow it up with, so you'd rather play against Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Peru, Colombia, Ecuador,
yeah,
instead of Switzerland, Northern Ireland, Bulgaria, really?
Lithuania.
Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously. And he's kind of making it out as if this playoff's unfair somehow.
Right.
Well, how about if you're North Macedonia? You've got to go and play the European champions over one game in Italy. You talk about unfair for North Macedonia. So whichever way he looks at it, he's talking nonsense.
But they make it to the playoff because they fail. It's not like they were forced into the playoff. No, no, no. They themselves, with their performance or lack thereof, made their way into the playoff. They got themselves in this situation. Nobody else forced them into this situation.
Mario, you mentioned, of course, what, 2002, when the Dutch didn't qualify for the World Cup. What is that feeling like, not only, of course, on the night, that elimination, but then when the tournament's going on, you've got to live your day-to-day life with everybody saying, well, you should have got us there.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, what the guys are already mentioning, you know, like, for him to jump into that situation, I felt the same, because I never forget myself coming into Amsterdam and going to a bar, and literally on the screen of the bar, they managed to put my name and say, Mario, go home. I never forget that day. They put it on a screen, and I'm telling you, that bar where I was sold out, so it was like maybe, I mean, it's just packed, and everybody could see it. And for him then to mention my name and put it up, and at that time I just left Ajax, so it was in my city. So I felt like really uncomfortable. I didn't maybe leave the bar, but it just made me understand and say like how deep-rooted it was in certain people. And the disappointment, of course, for myself as an individual, even thinking back about it, what do we want? Do we want to achieve the highest we can in our football career? And the best thing to do that is to represent your nation. And if you can do that, you try to bring trophies home. When you don't get that, sometimes you just feel like it's sad, but sometimes fans love kicking you when you're already on the floor. And I tell you, when you're not qualified, you definitely feel like that. And that's why, going back to Bonucci, when he mentioned that, and Steve kind of highlighted it really well, traveling in South America is a different way of traveling going from Italy to Amsterdam. So I'm telling you, like, the traveling, what they go back and forward, what you guys do up here and in South America, is really way more intense. So I think the preparation for him to get to that level, he should have taken care of it.
Nice, Mario. You learned early that we bring up all your worst points in your career before any sort of highlights. Just pick 10 or anything.
Actually, Mario, are you still getting it? Are you still getting it from back then?
No, not at all. Because, you know, I'm telling you, Steve, it's so long ago. And after that, I went to the Euro with the national team. So I didn't, even myself, I didn't really think about it that much as more, because when you get qualified, you just put it behind you.
It must be a Scottish thing.
You think of 1986, I'm that still missed
getting,
chance.
I am still getting it, Mario. I missed a chance in 1986. And I still get it every time. Yeah.
Yeah. Every time he goes home, oh, you remember that miss?
She keeps going, keep thinking you're going to score.
And did you?
Yeah. Oh, dear. But, well, England, meanwhile, of course, have qualified, yet their friendly yesterday against Ivory Coast was dominated by the booing of Harry Maguire. This is what Henderson had to say about it. I can't get my head wrapped around what happened at Wembley tonight. Harry Maguire has been a colossus for England. Without him, the progress made at the last two tournaments would not have been possible. To be booed off at his home stadium for no reason, what have we become? This is what Gareth Southgate had to say about it all.
Don't think for 1 minute the other players won't be looking at that thinking, that could be me one day. And that's been one of the problems with playing for England. Players have thought, do I want to go? Because when it turns a little bit difficult, then the crowd are going to turn on me.
I think it's ridiculous. Harry's been unbelievable for this country in every, you know, the World Cup, the Euros. He's been outstanding. I think even tonight he was brilliant. You know, our first two goals, you know, come from the first one, him driving out with the ball, and the second one comes from him driving a little bit and then playing the pass into Ollie. You know, not every centre-back can have those qualities.
Meanwhile, Declan Rice tweeted out, total embarrassment from whoever booed tonight. Harry Maguire has been incredible every single time he's put on the England shirt. Absolute nonsense now it's becoming. Back your own players, especially with a major tournament coming up. This is what Harry Maguire tweeted as well. Enjoyable week playing for my country. England flag. emoji. So he didn't rise to the bait. We've discussed it before, Stevie, the fact that obviously Liverpool players would be booed when they played for Scotland. Mm. John Barnes, we were talking just before we came on air, was booed as well when he played for England.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is... Listen, there's an old saying, you know, if somebody tells you something or you keep hearing something long enough and hard enough, then you start believing it. And the press, England players have been lucky over the last what, decade, because they've done well at big tournaments, that the press have actually been very nice to them. This is a complete and utter case of the press jumping on one guy. That's all it is.
We're part of it, to be fair. We jump on Harry Maguire. We talk about Harry Maguire. Yeah, we criticise Harry Maguire.
When he's playing in games. But you've got a situation where, you know, in training, they're playing a game of keep ball that every single team does.
Yep.
And there's always carry-ons and there's this and that. And somehow it's turned again into, well, Harry Maguire's rubbish. He doesn't know the rules. He can't even play kickball. This is the press. There's no question about it. And the morons that boo, I mean, seriously, they've got to have a look at themselves. I don't even understand it, to be honest. Why would you go and pay money to support your country and boo somebody because the press have been criticising them every single opportunity they could?
Mario, am I right in thinking when you played for Birmingham and you had that relegation scrap, you were booed by your home fans?
Yes. And it was one of the moments that it was one of the saddest moments in your football career. You know, Steve highlighted it. If you're going to pay money just to come and boo me, I had a moment when, you know, you walk on the field and everybody cheers for you, you know, and they're super happy about it. Then I remember slipping and I made a mistake and we lost the game. I think it was against Spurs. Every ball I touched it then, it was literally, it happened in half a year. And then every ball I would touch, they start booing me. And just that feeling, it's similar to like you're going to work and 10 people love you, and then half a year later, all those 10 people are against you. But then put it in a football stadium and put that 10 into a 20,000 to 30,000. Imagine how you would feel. And I felt, honestly, it was one of the lowest moments in my football career. So I know how Harry feels. You know, the thing what Harry is going through is the price tag. It's just keep hunting him. And coming in from a team and going into such a big club, you're going to get that. I'm not highlighting in the sense of saying like that we could not judge him in the sense of his performance. But for England, he's doing the job that they expect him to do. Then I don't understand why they're bringing so much history to the kid, because booing is not making him a better player.
What about the argument, Ali, it's just part of the course, you know? He pays a millionaire. He gets to play football. Go out there and prove them wrong.
All right. What I would say to those fans is, what does it achieve? Right? Because Harry Maguire is going to be the center back for England come the World Cup. And if you're an English fan, right, you want him to do well. You want England to do well. And if England is going to do well, Harry Maguire is going to have to be playing at a high level. Do you think booing this player does anything for the confidence of the player? He's going through a tough time at the club level of Manchester United. And now you think, I tell you what's a good idea. So he's down. Let's kick him while he's down, because this is really going to lift him up. Right? It's nonsense. The logical thing to do would be to actually go all the way around and go in the opposite direction and actually lift the player. And every time he gets a ball, clap for the guy, right? Get his spirits up, because you need him at his highest level, at his best level. But that's never going to happen, because that would take reasonable people. And some of these people are simply not reasonable and not thinking logically when it matters most. And when it matters most is Harry Maguire playing well for England at the World Cup. And you need him to be confident in order for him to do that.
They're cowards. And you wouldn't find one of them standing up and saying they were one of the people that booed. I played with a guy who went to somebody's house, because he would come at United. We used to get 1,000 every game. Now, that means that you can hear things.
Right.
And you can spot people. And I played with a guy called Jimmy Sherry, who was getting it week after week from this guy. And he found out he was a season ticket holder. He found out where he worked. And he went to his work.
Fantastic.
And walked in the door and said to him, "You say one more word on a Saturday, and I'm going to come here every day of the week and give you stick at your work, because that's my work."
Wow.
And the guy's like, "Oh," the guy's like, "Oh, it was only a bit of fun." I mean, yeah. And that stopped it.
Wow.
That stopped it.
But to your point, Stevie, if these people come across Harry Maguire down the street, they want a picture. They want a selfie. They want an autograph. "Oh, Harry, you're great. You're great. You're fantastic. You're this, you're that." And then you turn around and just let yourself be sort of pushed around by everybody else that is booing. It's like, "Oh, they're booing Harry Maguire. Let's get on that, because that's a popular thing to do. That's a cool thing to do."
Yeah.
It is so dumb on so many levels.
How should he approach it? How do you get over it, Mario?
I think, you know, as a player, when people are booing at you, you don't want to respond while you're playing, because I don't want him to do that, because that will get him out of his game. But definitely, you know, for the players to stand up for him, that was one of the greatest things, because that shows you exactly what kind of team they are. And because fighting against your fans is not the one that you're going to move forward. But what Ali and Steve said, I 100% agree with that. Sometimes you have to ask yourself that question. You are a human being, and playing the sport that you like, that doesn't mean that we are stepping away from being a human. And we have emotions too. So sometimes we might be stepping out of the way, because if you're booing me, and just like Elliot, some are just following. You follow. So you see someone and you follow and you jump on the bandwagon and you just keep on carrying on. And that's not the way to move forward, because in your own life, would you want to be a follower or you want to be a leader? So lead. Don't jump on because the one in front of you is booing. Don't do that. Do it for a reason. If you have no reason, just be quiet and watch the game.
A lot of speculation, of course, as to who will be coaching Harry Maguire next season. Rangnick will be out the door in the summer. A lot of speculation there could be Ten Hag coming in. This is what Louis van Gaal had to say about that possibility. He said he should choose a football club, not a commercial club.
Oh.
Mario, you know Louis van Gaal well. Before we get on to the relationship you have with him, let's talk about this quote from him suggesting that maybe United isn't the best option for Ten Hag.
Oh, my God. Look, you're asking about, like, he was my, I will say, like, what he said, you know, my primary coach, my teacher. I don't agree to this. Why I don't agree to this? This is the modern day of football. You know, we're moving into a market where every club and every brand needs to be part of advertising, because if not, you don't highlight it, no one is coming. But United was always a big club. You know, we're not going to shy away from it. When I came as a kid, you know, coming to England, how could I not even look at Man United and whatever they were? For God knew that too. He might didn't like how the situation ended up at the end. But you think Ten Hag is going to think about that? No. When you have a dream as a coach or as a player, you're looking at your own dream. You don't look what somebody else thinks about it. And I say it again, you understand, like Van Gaal, yes, is my coach, is my guy, is gave me the debuts for Holland and Ajax. But away from that, I don't agree to this code, because you should go wherever you think is right for yourself and not what happened to a coach before.
I think we've got to understand what he's saying. I think what Van Gaal's saying is not... He's talking about the people that are running the club that are more interested in the commercial side. Mm. I think that's what he's talking about. You know, you can look at other sides, like Man City and Liverpool, who who the people in charge are football people. And the most important thing to them is what happens on the field. And they both understand that if things are happening on the field, then the commercial side of it will take care of itself anyway. Whereas United, it seems like it's all about the commercial side, and then if things are not going well, we'll just appease everybody and we'll get rid of the manager, or we'll just sign an old player. Let's sign a big name, or we'll just spend a lot of money and it'll look good. I think that's what Van Gaal's talking about. He's talking about him joining a place where the football is the most important thing, which Manchester United is not.
Mario, according to the bookies, Ten Hag is favourite to take over at Old Trafford. Those that have reservations about him say, yeah, it's OK, go and do that in the Eredivisie, but can he do it in the Premier League? He doesn't have experience there.
Look, he's a very technical coach. You know, he thinks about the game, he understands the game. I met him personally, so I had a chat with him. 2 years, I think, I was invited to come to Miami and meet Ajax there. He talks about the game, he thinks about the game, very understandable. Of course, you're going to make the next step into a bigger club. And Man United has been looking for years now for a perfect fit. And now they're going to Ten Hag. You know, he's young in the game. But, you know, sometimes you got to take the chance, because what are you going to do? You're going to wait. And I'm not saying like Ten Hag is the only option that they have. But what are they going to do? They're going to wait now, and then they say we should have. Now, if you think he's right, then you should go for it. But I do agree with you, like, the Eredivisie is not the same level or league as the Premier League. I always say that, because every time when people go to England, then in Holland they go like, ooh, that's kind of tough. Yeah, but guys, it's always been like that. It's nothing new.
More from Mario, by the way, on Extra Time today. As always, you can check that out over on our website. Stevie and Ali, of course, here as well to answer some of your questions.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Et plutôt en réussite sur ses corners.
Le coaching gagnant avec Kouba qui avait cru tout à l'heure sur le but de Slimani être décisif pour son premier ballon. C'est lui qui avait centré. Le but a été refusé. Celui-ci est valable pour Ahmed Touba au deuxième poteau qui vient permettre à l'Algérie.
Parce que le match n'est pas terminé encore. Hein. Ce match n'est pas terminé. Colin Spy avec la déviation.
La déviation de Colin Spy et le Cameroun incroyable dans le temps additionnel de cette prolongation qui vient reprendre l'avantage. 2-1, c'est Kartoko et Kambi, il me semble, qui est venu pousser ce ballon au fond. Oh, stupeur, Ablida. Le Cameroun qui jouera la prochaine Coupe du Monde au Qatar. Qualification historique, victoire 2-1 sur la pelouse de l'Algérie dans une fin de match ahurissante.
Unbelievable scenes, Belmadi, the Algerian, sat there for a long time in just complete stunned silence, not quite believing what he experienced. If you turn this off as Algeria scored, yeah, exactly. You thought it was over, it was done. I think most people did. Nadim said on yesterday's show he did the same. Incredible. But of course, Cameroon kept that fight, kept that drive, kept that belief. And the more you see that goal, it's a great finish, Alec.
It is well taken. Algeria, of course, defensively all over the place, desperate to try to clear it. Cameroon does well with a flick on the header and then the finish, cleanly taken. What a goal, what a moment for Cameroon.
124th minute in extra time. Cameroon then advancing on the away goal rule. Meanwhile, of course, we saw elsewhere Ghana advancing against Nigeria. We talked about that a lot with Colin and Nadim yesterday. We saw Morocco advancing as well. But let's relive, shall we, what we saw between Senegal and Egypt. Of course, once again, it would go to penalties as it would in the African Cup of Nations. But there aren't many situations, if you were asked pre these penalty shootouts, how you thought it was going to play out. Because this was kind of unique in the way that everything happened. It started off with Koulibaly coming up, and these things slow. I don't like a slow walk up, Steve. It scares me.
No, to be honest, I was. The thing is, Koulibaly took the first penalty the last time as well. So there's no reason to think he's going to do anything other than put the ball in the back of the net. It's not the worst penalty ever.
Is he trying to be too perfect with it?
Listen, at the end of the day, when you're putting pace on it, it makes the accuracy harder, and I think that's what happened. I don't think it's particularly a bad penalty. It's just a tad too high. Hmm. He's gone for height, he's gone for the top corner. Unfortunately for him, he's come off the crossbar.
It's just a matter of inches, isn't it? And it's interesting, of course, we talked about Salah taking the fifth penalty in the last shootout and how that was wasted. And almost to prove the critics wrong, as we've just seen the Koulibaly penalty once again here, Ali. Just the underside, it's inches, isn't it?
It's inches away from being absolutely perfect.
So then Salah would be given the task of taking the first penalty. Right. And obviously we discussed at length yesterday, and it's gone viral, the shots of the laser beams that we've seen shone at Salah.
And you think about Mohamed Salah, did he go to the manager and say, you know what, let me take the first one. I don't want to be just sitting on the sidelines or sitting in midfield and watch everybody else take a penalty and then me not getting an opportunity to do so because we don't get to the fifth penalty. And now, if you're Egypt and you think about the swing of emotions here, right? Koulibaly misses, you're thinking, Salah, well, this is guaranteed. This is the guy that, if there's one guy that is going to put it in the back of the net, it's going to be Mohamed Salah, and we're off flying. He misses, and now the whole atmosphere changes. Within that stadium, within the players, Senegal feels a whole lot better by themselves, and Egypt much more panicked at this point.
I think that was what was surprising about this penalty from Cissé, of course, to tap up and take the second one for Senegal. You thought, with that momentum, he would just bury this no problem, Stevie, or is that me living in a little bit of a Hollywood world?
Yeah, I think everything you said there up to no problem was correct. Right. Because it is not easy.
Man.
And there's not a lot of pace on it, but he's actually made the goalkeeper make a save. Now, because the goalie goes the right way, it just looks like that's a horrible, hopeless, useless penalty. But well, it's actually on target, and the goalie's made a save.
So then it'll be a lifeline, really, of course, then, for Egypt. Zizo would be given the task to take it. Mendy, very generously, giving him the ball ahead of the penalty kick.
Now, my thing about this penalty in particular is that he goes with a little hippity hop before he takes a penalty. In a moment of pressure like this, to be able to do the hippity hop and wait out Mendy and thinking that he's going to go the wrong way, it takes a lot of class and a lot of ability. It takes a lot of guts as well. And I just don't think that Cissé was quite ready to be doing the hippity hop and get cute here because Mendy waited him out and said, okay, what are you going to do now?
You have to have a clear head when you're taking a penalty like that. And in a situation with the pressure that's on, I don't care how good you are, it's tough to be able to see a really clear picture.
So four penalties, zero goals so far in the shootout. Sarr with the opportunity to make amends here. And he does.
Now, you see how easy that looked. But if the goalie goes the other way, we're talking about the last penalty
right.
he had where
right,
it was
like
an easy save.
Yeah.
So it's it really is a toss of a coin sometimes.
So that puts the pressure more, doesn't it, on Egypt?
Yeah.
Al-Sulayah stepping up.
And this is a big moment. Because all momentum is with Senegal. You've already had two misses. You know it's on you. Senegal has just scored in front of you. You're thinking, man, I don't make this. It's game over. I don't know. I can't handle this laser party all over the place. And somehow you got to focus on the execution, on the moment, and be able to stare Mendy down and say, today's my day. It's not your day. And just as close as Koulibaly's was off the crossbar and out, this was off the crossbar and in. The games of Mendy drifting to the left and then to the right initially off the crossbar and in. Egypt are back in it.
Yeah, they certainly are. One apiece then, as both the third penalty takers would score. Next up, Bama Dieng. Now this, out of everyone, he seemed to be the calmest.
Mm.
And that kind of is shown by the execution of his penalty here.
Well, I don't think I'd be too far out if I told you that he probably inside was far from calm.
Right.
You're trying to hide your emotions at this point and look confident and look cool. And then when you execute like that, everybody thinks you are.
So, next up, Mustapha Fati needs to score this. And it's a weird run-up again.
Yeah, and again, and what I'll say is that in a moment of pressure, if you don't have the plan that Stevie just mentioned, a clear mind as to how you want to execute, and then you go with this sort of odd run-ups and quick little steps, and it reminds me of Zaza a couple of Euros ago. It's almost as if he's coming up with a plan as he's approaching the ball, and that's just not the way to do it.
Again, goalie saved it.
Yeah.
It's a good save. He understands that he's not gone the right way and it's gone down the middle, but he's got the presence of mind, Mendy, to stick one of those big long legs out. I mean, he goes the wrong way, but concentrates on it the whole way and keeps it out.
That's how your man feeling this walk up.
I would suggest that he's like everybody else. I don't care who you are. You're excited. And I guess the more experience you have, and he's already scored the winner.
So you're excited more than nervous?
I think you're excited more than nervous.
You're confident if you're Sadio Mane, because he's done this before, and he's done this not too long ago in a moment of true importance, in a defining moment. And full focus, full concentration. I've done this before. I'm taking no chances here. Here we go. Deep breath, focus. I have a plan. Blow the whistle, man. Let's go. I'm ready to do this. And then the execution is perfect.
Oof. Low and hard. That's a guy that knew before he even started walking up what he was doing.
Right, as opposed to some of the other ones that we saw.
As opposed to some of the other flippity-flopping and the slow and the jumps and the stutter steps. Get it on target and get have plenty of pace on it, and then you've got to make the goal and save it.
Mario, have you ever seen a penalty shootout quite like this one? Well, Mario, not with us. I thought we were linking up. You can just see there, straight down the middle.
So much confidence in it. Ali, you go, because there's so much confidence in the way he's kicking it. Wow.
And that's exactly it. It's that the plan, as Stevie just mentioned, you go up there knowing what you want to do. You're not making it up as you're running up to the ball. In a moment of pressure, it's so very difficult to handle that pressure and be able to execute and do it to perfection when you're trying to make it up as you go. Sadio Mane says, you know what, I'm ready for this. This is my moment. I'm not afraid of this. Let me go ahead and execute the way I know how.
I think we can hear Mario. Mario, what a shootout.
Sorry, come again, sorry?
What a shootout this was.
Yeah, no, this was incredible. But just the way you guys already mentioned, you see the run-up for some other guys. One of the guys does a hit, like a little jump. And you playing against Mendy. Who does Mendy has in his team that does the identical way of taking penalty kicks? Jorginho, that is his skill. So if you're going to take the way you took that penalty against him, you should consider yourself and think like, I'm running up to a goalkeeper that have seen that in and out and have practiced so much with Jorginho. So he really knows what's going to happen, and he still did it, and he missed the penalty.
I remember Stevie speaking after the League Cup final where, of course, Kepa was brought in for Mendy. And you said, look, statistically, obviously, Thomas Tuchel was working on figures here.
Yep.
And that's what he's gone with. Yep. Hasn't worked this time, but it probably will the next. Right. Does what we've just seen, once again, Mendy being part of a penalty shootout for his national side and once again being successful with them, change that?
I don't think so.
Really, Steve?
No, because
he just won.
If you believe in the stats, and you believe in the way you work. You know, Tuchel obviously works with a lot of different things, including stats. And the reason he made that change with Kepa is because of the stats. Now, because it goes wrong once, you don't just rip everything up and start again. You know, that's like playing theatre back and you lose a game and you go, right, well, I'm never doing that again. No, I think absolutely Tuchel will stick with what he believes to be right. We all know that you make decisions, and regardless of how confident you are all the time, they're not 100% foolproof. And that's the only reason that Kepa didn't say one in that League Cup final. But I'll tell you what, if it happens again, Mr. Tuchel will put him in goal.
Stevie, you're an old school guy, right?
Is that good or bad?
Get ready. That sounds like
Hold on.
Hold on. It's me snooze time. Wake me up when you're finished.
I think of myself as old school as well. We pay attention to the stats, and I think there is a value and a place for stats in the game. And I think as time goes on, stats become even more important to make sure that you know your players and how they perform at the highest level. But you cannot lose the feel of the game.
The nuance.
Stevie. The moment. the thing that as a manager and as a player, there are certain things that you read of a player. And Mendy, in that particular game, in which we're talking about the League Cup final, was having one heck of a match. I mean, this guy was saving it left, right, center, everywhere. How do you take that responsibility away from the goalkeeper based on what you see on stats in that moment? Now, obviously, now we can second guess it all we want because it went wrong. But man, there's something to be said about looking at a player in the eye and knowing full well that he has had a fantastic game, that he's full of confidence, and that this is his moment to take it away from him. I don't think it was the right decision. I said it then, and I'll say it now.
Mario, next cup final. Do you think Tuchel should stick to his guns and put Kepa in for Mendy? Or, given what we've seen once again from Mendy for Senegal, he should make that switch?
Yeah, I would stick with Steve. Sorry, Al, but I will stick with him. You know what? You know why? Because the decision is made before the game. I don't think you're looking at the game and thinking like Mendy had a great game. Yeah, I totally agree with that. But the decision is already made. You're not going to talk to your goalkeepers and say, like, look, you're going to come in and this will... No, you make it clear. Penalties, you are saving them. I mean, why? Because I've seen this happen before. It worked out really well for Holland when Van Gaal did it. And that's why when Tuchel did it, it wasn't a surprise to me. What I also say, if Kepa is not in a good form and is he not feeling good, I would never want to see that, because then I would love Tuchel to make the decision before the game and say, like, no, Mendy, you stay on.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
So Senegal through to the World Cup. Egypt out. That was the drama of African Cup of Nations. For CONCACAF, it isn't actually as dramatic, really. Everything's pretty much sorted going into the final round of matches. Canada with a chance, of course, to finish that top place. The US, meanwhile, actually against Costa Rica. They have to lose, I think it's 6-0 for Costa Rica to go above them, according to the goal difference. Mexico are fine as well. So those top four will go through. Obviously, Costa Rica going through to the playoff. Here are the games tonight. Hercules Gomez is with us. Herc, this Costa Rica-US game is at 9 o'clock. That's quite late. Why should I stay up late for this one?
It is late for you guys. How are you guys doing? It's 6 p.m. here, Pacific, so I'm more than fine, but it is a late one. Let's just hope the boys stay up for this one, because I think in the back of everybody's mind, you're almost wondering, there's no way. I mean, they lost 4-0 last time. There's no way in San Jose that they would make this interesting, right? I mean, Costa Rica has 9 players sitting on a yellow, and they pretty much know they're going to be in that intercontinental playoff match to go to the World Cup. They're going to save some guys, alternate squad. There's no way this will be interesting. So I think you're pretty much safe tonight. I don't think there's any way this will be somewhat interesting for Costa Rica. I don't see Mexico losing by multiple goals to El Salvador and the Azteca, and I don't see the U.S., bottling it up and losing by 5 or more.
Meanwhile, I see you and Seb been stirring it up with regards to who should be in charge of Mexico, Herc. You have Herrera on the show. Tata Martino is, of course, in charge of the national side at the moment. What are you up to?
You know, it's interesting. I'd love to ask Stevie his opinion on this, because we had Miguel Herrera on our program, Ahora Nunca, and we asked him about the coaching position and if he's interested, because his name is circulating a lot around the press in Mexico, and he was just like, you know, I don't really want to speak on it, and then he spoke on it. Yes, I am interested, yes. Also, if he has health issues, he should step aside. Stevie, if you're the manager of the national team and you hear this from a domestic manager who's coaching in the domestic league, like, what are your immediate thoughts? Because Tata Martino was asked about it, if he would like to comment on it. And he's like, nope, I don't want to comment on it. But you got to be a little bit upset here, right?
Yeah. No, you're not happy. You're not happy at all. You know, it's called professional courtesy. And whether you want the job or not, then you say there's a man in charge. And until it becomes available, I'll keep my thoughts to myself. That's what you do for professional courtesy. On the other hand, if you're Herrera, who I guess is not, I think his wiring's a little different, shall we say? So he's probably only thinking about himself and doesn't really care less about the guy in charge.
Old school, wiring a little different.
Well, he is.
His
wiring's completely different.
But Tata Martino, you imagine, will be in charge for Mexico in the World Cup, no?
I don't really imagine. So, listen, Tata Martino's got a lot of problems. His biggest problem isn't just what's circulating around the Mexican press. It could be his health. He's not been able to fly to any of the games outside of Mexico City right now that's going out. That'll be, I guess, touch and see how he goes from there. But also, this team isn't playing very well. Tata Martino wasn't brought here to qualify the Mexican national team. Ali knows this setup very well. They're expecting quinto partido. They're expecting, you know, the quarterfinals. They're expecting beyond. But Tata Martino has a team right now that doesn't score. They are very good defensively, but not only do they not score, that famous trident of Chucky Lozano, Tecatito Corona, who Sebastian Salazar loves very much, and Raul Jimenez, they scored 0 goals when on the field together. So he's got some serious problems. Besides that, I get the sense, the growing sense, that his stubbornness with the blacklisted players, with the press, with not making changes, with just being his way, has grown tiresome with the players. He's wearing thin on the players. And this wouldn't be the first time in any cycle that the Mexican national team has qualified for the World Cup and yanked the coach and not gone with said coach to the World Cup. If I'm a betting man, and I am, I don't think Tata Martino's on that flight.
Hercules, as always, I listened to a podcast with Seb, and it sounded very much like Football America's was his show, and you were kind of the sidekick. I don't know if you're on
controversy.
That's it. Doesn't matter. My wife, Sebastian Salazar, with you guys, same thing.
Football America's then with Seven Herc will be with you for the final whistle tonight. So be sure to check that out. They're bringing you everything you need to know about clash between the US and Costa Rica. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Let's confirm then. All the teams that have already qualified for the World Cup, there are a lot of them, of course, ahead of Friday's draw. And they're in Qatar for us, Alexis Nunes and Gab Marcotti.
Hey, Dad. Well, as promised, Gab Marcotti is in town. That's how you know it's a big week. He came in as silky smooth as my shirt, Gab. But there is a FIFA Congress that's going to go on. We're both going to be there. But the main thing is the draw, that we'll find out who 29 of the 32 teams that have qualified for the World Cup will play in the group stages. What are the biggest headlines going into the draw, you think?
Well, in addition to the ones who aren't here, but we don't need to mention the teams who haven't qualified, I think obviously one of the interesting things is going to be Qatar, a top seed, as traditionally happens, yeah, with host nations. But the rest of the way, they're going to basically do it all by FIFA ranking, except for those three slots that haven't yet been determined. So the Inter-Confederation playoffs, and also that other path in UEFA, the one obviously involving Ukraine
and Scotland,
And Wales. So you could get a situation where, you know, you could get certain groups that are substantially stronger than others despite this layering.
And then, of course, we're in Qatar. And as we said, it feels like a lot more eyes are on this one, just on the entire staging of it. We're here, like we talked about yesterday. It's a massive construction site. Going into this draw, though, what stands out to you?
I think what stands out is just the preparation that's gone into this, and the fact that there's so many question marks here, Alexis, about how the tournament's actually going to unfold. You know, I can't reinforce this enough. Qatar is very, very small.
Yep.
It's basically a country that is essentially just one city. You can drive around the entire perimeter in a little over 2 hours. I have actually done that. I did that on my last trip here. So some of those teams like Germany, like France, who've decided not to stay in Doha, they're an hour away, but they're basically in the desert. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic, interesting recovery times. Obviously, travel not a factor. we're in total uncharted territory here.
Uncharted territory, indeed. Like I keep saying, it's like we're living in a massive construction site, so it'll be a pretty interesting World Cup. Gab just touched down literally like about an hour ago, so we're going to get him some rest because we do have to go to the FIFA Congress tomorrow where there's a whole lot more to talk about, and then it's the draw. We'll find out everything in less than 24 hours. Back to you, Dan.
Thank you very much. I tell you what, busy day for Gab. Before he flew out, he did the Gab and Jules podcast.
Oh, professional.
Jules couldn't even be bothered to go. Oh. Stuart Robson sitting in. As always, you can check that out over on the website.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Meanwhile, Wednesday saw action in the UEFA Women's Champions League quarterfinals. It was quite the game between Barcelona and Real Madrid. 8-3 on aggregate, 5-2 on the night to Barcelona. Meanwhile, PSG against Bayern Munich. That went extra time. PSG taking the place in the semi-final in the end. Meanwhile, tomorrow sees Wolfsburg take on Arsenal. That game on a knife's edge, 1-1 going into the tie. Meanwhile, Lyon against Juventus, with the initiative. Barcelona are absolutely flying at the moment after that victory against Real Madrid. That is...
That's a good run, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
It's not bad. Uh-huh. 41 matches, 41 victories.
204 goals.
Yeah, 200, yeah, I'm saying you're supposed to say this, but 204 goals. They've conceded just 16. But it wasn't just about that run. It was about the world record attendance that we saw at the Camp Nou for that tie against Real Madrid today. 91,553. That is the most attended women's football match ever that we have seen. And one of the person who was there, Gemma Soler.
Hey.
Record breaker, Gemma Soler. Give us an insight. It just must have been an incredible evening in Barcelona.
Hola, Dan. Yes, it was such an emotional, special night. Make me remember why I do. I love this sport. Why I love football. Sometimes I tend to forget it. I've been 15 years in this business. I've been in the finals of World Cup, many Champions League finals, many crazy ligas and other sports finals. And what I've just lived earlier today in the Camp Nou, it was something different, special, authentic. It might be because it has just happened, but what I've lived today, it was different. It was like authentic football. The communion between the players and the fan base was amazing. The public were all the time cheering, all the time, the 90 minutes. And of course, the team won. And you can say, okay, it's a big result on aggregate, but it was a thrilling game. It was a lot of technique, great goals. The Mapi Leon, the first Barcelona goal was amazing. But then the 2-1 just after the break from Real Madrid was a great, great goal. So it was such a special night. And let me tell you something, and a scoop that is that the semifinals, you know, Barcelona, they have just reached the fifth semifinals of the Champions League in six seasons. So the semifinals, and that's for me something very big, they will be played again as well at the Camp Nou. So I think a new era for women's football have just started today.
Gemma, when I lived in Spain, 12 years ago, it wasn't on the, women's football didn't get any coverage. It wasn't on the radar at all. What has changed? What has made such a big difference?
Well, let's not forget something. I mean, Barcelona is an amazing team. They have the best player, the best Spanish player and the best European player and the world player in the world, like Alexia Putellas. But let's not forget that not all Barcelona women's football games are televised. La Liga games, not all of them are televised. They are playing in stadiums that they don't have natural grass. Not now, but 3 years ago, they had to take showers after the games with cold water. So yeah, a lot of change. What we've seen today is something different, something special, something historical. But let's not forget that we're really, really far from where we should be. So it has changed a lot, and the media coverage, of course, is helping a lot. We you could see this game today in ESPN, but there's a lot of work to do. And I mean, football is great here in Barcelona, in Spain. So this generation, Alexia Putellas used to go as a supporter at the Camp Nou. So they grow in this academy that it's really great academy, like La Masia. But this woman, they put a lot of effort. They had to train at nighttime. I mean, the Spanish La Liga is not professional yet. It's not professional. It will be next season, but it's not professional yet. So it changed a lot, Dan, since you were here, but there's still so much work to do.
Barcelona, of course, wrapped up La Liga title, didn't they, earlier this month. And meanwhile, for the men, Real Madrid sit at the top of La Liga. They've had a break with the international fixtures after that disappointment in El Clasico. They sit 9 points clear of Sevilla at the top of the table. Sevilla in action against Barcelona on Sunday. Preceding that on Saturday, it's Celta Vigo against Real Madrid. And Gemma, this will give us a real insight into where Real Madrid are psychologically after that defeat against Barcelona, whether they can pick themselves up, dust themselves down, and just get on with winning this league.
Yeah, because a lot has happened since we left El Clásico in the Santiago Bernabéu. There's been a weekend without football with these FIFA games. And Real Madrid have a tough game in Balaidos against Celta. Barcelona have it as well, but it's in the Camp Nou against Sevilla. So let's see. I think it's very, very difficult that Real Madrid loses this Liga. It's the gap is too big, and they have an extraordinary squad, even though Karim Benzema is still doubtful and Mandy, but I think they have a squad to win, to keep this Liga. But an accident can happen in Balaidos, and if this happens and they don't take the 3 points, we could be talking about a crazy last match days, 9 match days that we have left in La Liga. So we will see.
Gemma, as always, thank you very much. Of course, the big news coming out from Real Madrid, Carlo Ancelotti testing positive for COVID, might miss that game on Saturday against Celta Vigo. It is a match, of course, you can see live on ESPN Plus with coverage starting at 12 p.m. Eastern. Meanwhile, Ruud van Nistelrooy has been announced as the new coach of PSV. He will take over next season. Of course, looking to turn their fortunes around. They're currently sitting behind Ajax. He's the current reserve team coach. And just a reminder how things stand in the Eredivisie. Ajax currently sitting 2 points clear of PSV. Final sitting in third on 55 points, 11 adrift. 20 against PSV, live on ESPN Plus on Saturday. Meanwhile, also on Saturday, plenty of Bundesliga games for you, including Bayern Munich away against Freiburg, and the late one, big game for Dortmund as they play host to Leipzig. All those available here on Plus. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow for more. I'm off tomorrow. Kay will be here. Jan will be here. You here as well, Stevie?
Not me.
Wow. Ali?
Not me.
Wow. Okay. Be sure to join Kay in the studio. Jan Ogafjordtoft with her, as I'm sure they'll just start to look ahead to what's happening at the weekend domestically. And I imagine as well, Gab Marcotti's dream World Cup draw.
Who doesn't need that?
And nightmare draw as well, I'm sure. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next.
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome in then to latest edition. Mario, pay attention. Welcome in to latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Ali Moreno is with us, and Stevie Nicol. Mario Malkiel's with us as well. Pay attention, man. This isn't your first rodeo. Where are you, mate, by the way? It feels like a hotel room vibe.
I'm in Los Angeles, living the sky blue life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, horrible. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good.
My jacket is blue. Does that count?
Stevie's moving you.
Just like Ali. I'm like Ali.
Stevie, do you think these back-to-back losses for Egypt against Senegal will affect the Salah Mane on-pitch chemistry?
Absolutely not.
No?
Not at all. It'll make no difference to them whatsoever. Mane, as much sympathy as he had for Salah after the last defeat, he will have even more the next time they meet up. So, no, not a chance it affects anything.
Mario, did it ever come up, international rivalries in the dressing room?
No, because at the end of the day, you as a team, you want to win something, and as a nation, you just belong to that group. So I agree. No, it should not be, because you're playing professional football. This is not amateur football, because then it will be something else.
Mario, what's the expectations in Holland around the national team's progression in Qatar? Can they go all the way this time? Do you think this Dutch side has the ability and the mental strength to win the World Cup?
To win it will be a big shout. We have definitely surprised people before, but I think that will be a big shout, in the sense of like the way the team is performing, and sometimes they haven't found the smooth ride every game yet, but soon as they have that, I think they can push the team really far. But one thing we don't have is that sometimes our country, they love complaining, and I think if they support the team, we can do a hell of a lot more.
If there was a World Cup of complainers, do you think you're up there at number one? Because I look at Scotland and they complain
a lot. Oh, yeah, we will be up there for sure.
Ali, what country that has not won the World Cup previously has the best chance to make a good run in Qatar?
Belgium. We've been waiting for Belgium for a while.
Yeah.
They have plenty of good players.
You don't sound impressed, though.
Well, Belgium. Yeah. I'm bored of Belgium.
Well, you asked the question.
No, I know, but I feel like every big tournament, now it's Belgium's chance, and then they don't do anything. And okay, like, well, the next one.
Right. So I'll turn the question around to you. When you consider the countries that can win a World Cup,
yes,
right, that haven't won a World Cup,
yes,
you start running out of names very quickly.
None.
So that's your answer?
Yes, none. There's not going to be a new country, is there?
Well, but the potential is there. Man, I'm just a positive guy with positive energy and positive vibe. I'm saying Belgium has a chance.
Okay, Mario, you're a positive guy in LA, enjoying the sun. Any team that hasn't won the World Cup, who's got their best chance of doing so later this year?
I mean, hey, it's a tough one, man.
Just say none, Mario.
I say none, because if not, I say Ghana, but no, none.
So Mario says Ghana's going to win the World Cup, Stevie?
No, I did not.
Senegal.
Senegal. There we go. To the guys, right, Stevie, how much can consistent injuries be due to lack of preparation and dedication?
Absolutely.
Can a player's drive make them stronger and less likely to get hurt, or are injuries just random occurrences that they can't be held accountable for?
Look, there's kind of three different levels here, right?
Okay.
Some players who, regardless of what they do, just get injured.
Right.
You know, there's not many of them, but, you know, some guys are just so unlucky.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other guys at the other end of the scale who, you know, I played with a guy called Phil Neal. Phil played 450 consecutive games for Liverpool.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what are the odds?
Yeah.
Now, then you've got the next group who, if they don't look after themselves properly, I was talking about hydration.
Yes, a big proponent now for hydration.
The other day,
temperament.
Hydration.
Yeah.
Because then if you don't get hydrated properly, it affects your muscles, you can tear muscles. So there's three categories. The jammy ones that can do nothing wrong.
Yeah.
The ones that can do nothing right. And then you've got the group in the middle who, if they don't look after themselves properly, away from the field, it can what's the word I'm looking for?
Hinder?
Effect.
Oh, yes. Mario, how much did you look after yourself?
I look after myself as much as I had to. I'm not a drinker, so that helped me a lot. Away from that, I just always said, like, I am moved away on a couple of Bosman situations. And I thought my best way to drive that boat was, don't ever think about you're going to get injured. Because the moment you start thinking about injuries, you're going to get injured. So that was my driving moment. I never really worried about, oh, it's going to happen. The players that worry about it, they're going to get injured. The ones that don't, finish the game.
Mario, you probably came to the Premier League just as things were shifting, but were you surprised about some of the drinking culture that was there?
Yeah, because I heard some stories, you know, they would take shots and then go into the warm-up because they were already warm. So yes, I definitely went through that moment.
Hey, Phil Neal used to do that.
Phil Neal, there you go.
Steve, tell us. Come on, Steve. He'd go over to Ronnie Moran
and say, Ronnie, can I have the out the bag? And Ronnie would take a little quarter bottle of whiskey, and he would just take the top off and he'd just go and take a nip.
Really?
And that was him. And
wow.
450 games in a trot.
Well, that's a key.
Take the edge off.
Go figure.
ESPN FC does not recommend this
at
home or to those aspiring footballers who are watching.
Yeah, I don't think they have whiskey in the academies anymore.
Who was the greatest opponent that you ever faced, Mario?
My greatest opponent, I would say Ryan Giggs. Always said Ryan Giggs. I think Ryan, coming from Wales, was a lie. I think Ryan came from Brazil or something, because his movement was so silky, and the battles that we had on the field was so beautiful. You know, he was so good at dribbling, probably the best dribbler that I've ever seen in my life. He was so confident. And also, I always said, like, okay, if Ryan wants to attack, I'm going to make him defend. And he was so dedicated to run back with me all the way to the back line of his own. So I always say that, yeah, Ryan Giggs for me, ultimate, the best guy that I ever come across.
At what stage, Mario, did you just kick him?
Listen, I had a couple of moments I kicked him, but you know what? I was always like, I was never a player that wanted to kick someone to hurt him, but I definitely made you feel that I was there.
Well, that sounds a lot like maybe potentially that could hurt.
Yeah, he kicked him.
Sugarcoating it. I don't want to hurt you, Dan.
No. But I want to make sure you know I'm here.
I can't remember your answer to this question.
Well, it depends what answer you want. I played against Cruyff. I played against George Best.
Right.
Platini, Bonnier. Playing against a ton of great players. But the one guy that gave me trouble was a Spanish guy called Gordillo.
Right.
First name was
Gordillo.
Who was his first name again?
Gordillo?
No,
the last name was Gordillo.
Yes.
I don't remember his first name.
It wasn't Alejandro.
No, it was
anyway,
not.
There was a way of looking this up.
I couldn't figure this guy out. Scotland played Spain at Hampden Park. A World Cup qualifier. Couldn't walk the guy out. He's the only guy I remember not being able to walk out. I was just like, just hope it doesn't get it again.
Really?
And it's a different style that he had. And
he was very, he was awkward.
Was it Raphael?
Correct.
There you go.
Raphael Gordillo.
There we go. Look him up.
And he played for Real Madrid, but probably a lot of people don't remember his name because the team he played in had a lot of style.
Yes.
But he was a great player.
Wow. Ali?
I found myself playing against Uruguay at one point with Venezuela at home in a game that we needed to win, and we're tied 2-2, and it's late in the game, and I've been running the whole game trying to hold the ball up. It's not easy to do. And then I turn around and say, well, how is it going to be easy? Lugano and Godin are right next to me, and I'm having to hang on to the ball. Godin is putting his leg above my shoulder to get to the ball. If I get past him, then Lugano's cleaning me out, and he's not quite as subtle as Mario is, who says, I just want to let you know that I'm here. No, Lugano very clearly told me that he was there. And at that point, I thought, I don't know that we can score a third goal if this matchup continues, because I just don't have it in me to get past these guys. It was a reality check that if that was world class, I was far from it.
Ali, who are some of the greatest divers in soccer that have influenced your skill? Stevie, were you one of the first professionals to perfect diving? This is off the back of the video that I put on Twitter today of Stevie. If you haven't seen it, he picks up the ball on the edge of the box, Liverpool against Manchester United. Mm-hmm. Usain Bolt-like.
Yeah, I mean,
sprint.
The pace.
Incredible.
Why are you so surprised?
Sasa. To the other side. And then Viv Anderson puts his foot in and you just die. You're just a blatant dive. You do like a roly-poly.
What?
And the referee buys it and gives a free kick.
What? It's a good job you're good at answering questions. Or asking questions, sorry.
Why?
That's... I want to dive at all.
A lot of people saying it was a dive.
I couldn't care less. My left ankle told me it was.
Steve, that turn of pace took a lot of people by surprise.
Speed. What a run.
Do you want me to say?
I just say, yeah, I'm great. I was great.
And he, and by the way, if he hadn't been taken down,
yes,
viciously as he was,
yep,
he was going to goal.
So why would a dive? When no, playing not,
there you are. You see,
there you
take
go.
That dive. Take that dive. Right. Final question. We ran out. Ali would have been a doctor. We learned that yesterday.
Yes,
Nadim, an accountant, uh-huh, and Shaka, who can't pronounce temperament, an engineer. What would you have done if football hadn't come in the way? Mario, we know you would have been a singer, wouldn't you? Millions
no,
of gold platinum albums.
No, I would definitely not be a singer. No.
You released a single, man. We know.
I tried singing, but there was not. I wasn't good at it.
That hasn't stopped a lot of people being successful. Know,
Dan, listen. Sometimes you try something and you got to be honest to yourself. You're not good at it. And that happened with singing. I thought I was good, but then everybody else in the crowd said, no, Mario, don't try it again.
Hey, Bob Geldof didn't do bad at singing. He can't sing a note.
There we are, beautiful, nice, nice relevance. Nice relevant.
Bob Geldof.
So Mario, what would you have been? Not a singer, not a footballer.
I wanted to always have my own store. So that was my goal too. You know, like I went to school and I was going to getting ready to own my own clothing store. But then I became a footballer. So I thank God for achieving that, because that was actually what I wanted, to be a footballer.
Still in time, Mario. Bring out your label.
No. I love enjoying life. I did one dream already. Let me continue my second.
Stevie, I think you've talked about this before. You were an apprentice electrician.
I was. I still can't wire a plug. 6 months I was at it.
What did you do for 6 months?
Oh, I was the worst dodgepot you've ever seen. I could find little corners to hide in.
Right.
Oh, honestly. So, I was the master at keeping it the road.
Is there a job now that you look at and you thought, oh, I wouldn't mind doing that?
No. Absolutely not.
Nothing. No.
Zero.
No. Shepherd's pie taster.
If that was an option, I would be in the queue.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Front
yes.
and centre.
So, correct.
So for 6 months, you were learning to be an electrician.
I was, yeah.
Right. And you never learned how to wire a plug.
I still can't wire a plug, no. I ended up...
No. Where was your teacher?
Well, I ended up... What they ended up doing to me all the time was we used to go... So you've got... You know where you have your sockets?
Yes. Yeah.
So somebody has got to knock all the brick out to put a socket in.
Oh. Yeah.
And some unfortunate person has to go under the floorboards and houses to take all the wiring and stuff.
Oh.
So I got all those jobs.
Right.
Because I couldn't do anything.
Oh, God.
It's hard to be an electrician if you cannot do anything electric.
Yeah, and I didn't like heights either. That was... if I had to go up a ladder to make a hole for the socket,
right,
I was scared stuff.
Why did it even happen in the first place?
Correct.
I don't know.
Just woke up one day.
Well, I left school when I was 16, right? So at home, you leave when you're 16.
Yes.
And at 16, I was still playing schoolboy football.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not a guarantee of anything.
Yes, but there's still quite a few options, isn't there? Work in the local shop, do something like that.
Or, singing.
Or be an apprentice electrician, or like that. it just so happened it wasn't for me. But until you try it, you don't know.
You could have been a roadie for Bob Watt.
Stuart Pearce was a real electrician.
He
used to advertise in the Forest Programme his services.
Yeah.
I remember that. That is it. Mario, thank you very much. Thank you very much, boys. ESPN SC.
Thank you, guys.
On your screens tomorrow. Jan Agafjortov will be joining Kay. Be sure to tune in.